Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome back to the latest episode of the Lynx Magazine Golf Podcast. We have an exciting one teed up today. My name is Graylin Loomis, and I'm joined by co-host Ian Kreitzer. Ian?
Always good to be here.
Awesome. Well, today we're talking with a mentor and someone who has really left a huge mark on the golf media industry. We're joined by our editor here at Lynx Magazine, George Pepper. George, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Awesome. Well, Ian, what are we talking about today?
So George has reached a recent milestone in, as far as golf courses, and George plays a lot of golf, as we all know, and anyone's familiar with George knows, but reaching course 750 unique golf courses. So we're going to talk about everything in between and what it took to get to that milestone in the terms of this column in the fall issue. So basically, it'll be, we broke it down by, genre, and you chose kind of your 50 favorites. So we're just gonna be, it's going to be a general, talk about kind of golf courses and your favorites, our favorites, and, hopefully we'll inspire some good discussion.
Important to note that this is George's column in our fall 2018 issue. He'll be talking about, playing or having played, Burnham and Barrow, which was your 750th course. But George, tell us how you got started in all of this. Why did you keep track of how many courses you played? When did you start? And how, you know, give us your thinking here.
Well, it's funny. I guess as a kid, like a lot of us, I collected scorecards of my best rounds, and I didn't have too many, maybe a dozen. And then in 1976, I got hired by Golf Magazine. Suddenly, I started going to these great golf destinations, and I thought, well, maybe I'll keep track of these courses. And I don't think I had more than a dozen or so at that point, and I wrote them down on a piece of paper, the years I'd played them, the people I'd played with. And then when things went digital, I put them on an Excel file, and I started really keeping pretty good track, and it just grew and grew. And it's a fun exercise, something I would recommend to anybody, no matter what your course count is. Because number one, it's good mental exercise to try to think back on your life and come up with all the courses you've played. And it really prompts some nice memories, looking back on things that you otherwise might lose. Another nice aspect is, even now, how many years later, 40-some years later, I will remember a course now and then. Oh, yeah, Little Shady Acres in New Jersey. I played that back in 1983. And I'll rush home and put it in my Excel file. And you get an additional course without having to pay a green fee. And so that's kind of nice. And you can also manipulate the data and look at the number of courses you've played in each year. And interestingly, my kind of path and courses played each year has kind of a little mountain in it in the graph, and it's sort of the same graph you'd see in the courses built during the 80s and 90s. There was a huge course construction period then. Right. That's when I was playing 18, 20, 30, sometimes 30 golf courses a year, and that all slacked off, as did my course consumption over the last few years. So it's been fun.
What data points do you keep on the spreadsheet? Obviously the course, and it sounds like the year that you played it, but what else?
Well, of course, the state and the country, the architect, and then I have kind of a notes column where I put the people I've played with, any significant happenings in the course of the course.
Right. So you can organize, you can kind of manipulate that data as far as Excel, organize it by architect, played, you know, year, you know, whatever. So right. I'm sure that's really helpful with the growing list of a lot of golf courses.
Yeah.
So in that list, you have one that sticks out, one course. And I think it's one that's special to you and special to Graylin as well. I have not played it yet. And what would that course be?
The old course at St. Andrews. Yeah. Whenever I'm asked my favorite golf course, well, it was the first one. And then I never got it any better after that. I could probably spend this whole podcast talking about it. But there are a bunch of reasons. As you guys know, I lived there for a period of time. We owned a home in St. Andrews from 1983 to 2013. And my wife and I were there full time from, I think it was 2004 to 2010. So in the course of that tenure, I think I played the old course certainly over 250 times. Wow. And we all develop a soft spot for our home course. Now, I was very lucky to have the old course as my home course. Number two, it's as everyone says, it's unassuming, but the more you play it, the more you appreciate it. And for a course that was designed hundreds of years before anyone invented playing strategies, there's a hell of a lot of strategy on the old course. I always remember the line Henry Longhurst used in reference to the old. He said, on almost every shot, you have to step back and ask yourself, what exactly do I want to do here? And I think that's beautiful. Third reason, from the regular tees, it has to be the easiest major championship golf course in the world, certainly on a calm day.
Right.
So many people who play it for the first time on an easy day are so happy they come back shooting, sometimes the score of their lives. And beyond that, it fits my game. Somehow, just serendipitously, it fits my game. Even in my pre-dotage, I can still get the ball out there. Not as long as you guys, but not 300 yards. But I can, if I hit it squarely, get it over 250 yards. And as it happens, that is just long enough to get, Graylin, you would know this, just over the ridge on the left side of four, just over the ridge at number seven. When it's downwind on nine, I can drive that. When it's downwind on 10 or 12, I can drive those. When it's downwind, I can still get home on the par fives and two. And that is such a joy at my advanced age. So, you know, the old course, still, if I had one round left to play, despite the 250 I'd play, I'd do another one.
That would be it. Yeah.
And it just makes me want to get there sooner than later. You know, next year hopefully, but we'll see. Special place. So besides that, you kind of picked your 50 favorites, and like you said in the piece, they're not the prettiest, not the hardest, just the ones that you would you know, your favorites. And you broke them down by category. So the categories that you kind of broke them down by were the Seaside Charmers, Great Walks in the Park, Great Courses to Grow Old On, and Worth the Trip. These are all kind of self-explanatory, but you had some really, really good, courses in there, and ones that kind of will be the envy of a lot of avid golf travelers and a lot of our listeners. So Seaside Charmers, the old course fits that reference to an extent, but there's some other good ones in here as well. Cypress Point being one that is, you know, on the bucket list for most golfers. So National Golf Links, Newport, Old MacDonald, Pacific Dunes, Pebble Beach, just a lot of the great ones. So tell us about what makes a seaside course so endearing to golfers who might not have experience.
Yeah, I'm sort of biased in this way. I mean, golf began by the sea, and it's a pity in my mind that it isn't still there,
right,
and just there. There's something, as I've often said, I'd rather play a mediocre golf course beside the sea than a spectacular one inland. And there's something, I think, elemental and spiritual about walking with your golf clubs on your back beside the ocean. I mean, all the senses are there. You can feel the wind on your cheek. You can smell, sometimes even taste, the salt air. And, you know, it's just, it's so basic. You can, you know, hear the roar of the waves. In a sense, in my mind, these, I think I had 18 courses, have an unfair advantage over the other 732 on my list. I've never been able to construct the top 10 of my favorite courses, but if I had, I'm pretty sure that all 10 of them would come from this list.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't blame you. obviously haven't played as much seaside golf as you have, but the few I have played, been lucky to play, I can totally see where you're coming from on that. It's just it's a special feeling, and you know, and the I think another factor of that is you get a lot of wind too, and that's kind of
wind. A lot of links golf courses on that list, and
exactly.
And sometimes unavoidably, when you're beside the sea, there are not going to be too many houses.
That's true.
And so that's all part of the charm.
All part of the charm. Now going the complete opposite way, walks in the park. So parkland courses and just kind of a nice walk that if you had to be away from the sea, then that would be where you would go. So tell us about that.
Yeah, well, I would think in terms of the sheer integrity of the design, shall we call it, things like routing and pace and the balance of the holes, probably these 14 courses are superior to many, if most of the seaside courses. Mm-hmm. As I said in the column, they make me want to rescind my pronouncement about rather play a mediocre course by the sea than a spectacular one inland.
Right.
I mean, in addition to that, though, in addition to being great golf courses, they are great walks in the park, whether it's Augusta National or Pine Valley or Glen Eagles or Sleepy Hollow or any of them. They're all set on incredible land, many of them with incredible views. And it's land that's ideally suited to the construction of compelling, interesting, sometimes amusing golf holes, in addition to being just a nice place to take a walk.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of what I was thinking as well. Even if you didn't have your golf clubs on your back, or it would just be a nice place to go and spend an afternoon or a morning, you know, sweeping dew at these places.
Good places to play badly.
Another way to put it.
Absolutely. But then these kind of cover, you have a course in France, you know, Pine Valley, St. Louis Country Club, kind of covering the whole spectrum of great parkland courses.
And all the way down to public courses.
True.
Glen Eagles, you know, we have Caledonia Golf and Fish Club, places that aren't necessarily just exclusive enclaves, places that span the whole spectrum and the world.
Yeah, interestingly, they are for the most part oldish courses.
Mm. Right.
Maybe that's because they just let the land be.
Yeah. Exactly. And the one that sticks out to me as far as the public and being a newer course is Caledonia, obviously a Mike Strantz course.
Right.
Open to all. And Mike Strantz was kind of a different architect as far as the age that he where right. he designed.
Very visual designer.
Yeah, absolutely. An artist, a landscape artist, architect, more than a golf course designer.
Exactly. Absolutely. But yeah, so some really, really great courses on that list. And that kind of transitions to courses to grow old on.
Yeah, that's kind of a category I got from my good friend David Fave, the former director of the USGA, mm-hmm. who is similarly approaching codgerdom. he used it in reference to the old course,
right?
Which is on this list rather than on the seaside list. And I think probably the old course might be the best example in that it is flat. It's relatively short, and this is very key. The distances from green to tee are short. Mm. Going back to the old rule that you tee your ball within two club lengths,
right.
where you hold out your last putt.
That's been lost a little bit.
It sure has. One of my biggest annoyances in golf is having to walk anywhere where I'm not pursuing my ball. And that's happened a lot over the recent lengthening of golf courses because of the technology. You'll come to a green, and then you'll, instead of walking to your left, where the next hole is, you'll take a right and walk back between 50 and 100 yards to the tee.
Yeah.
That really, really annoys me, and no course that has even one hole like that is going to be on this list. In fact, this is a very small list. What do I have? 8 courses on there?
Seven.
And I went through and the list of 50, and I just couldn't find too many that were friendly to older people. Now, as I say, I think it's a function of the fact that courses have become longer. Most of the courses on this list, I think the average age of the 7 courses there is over 100 years, even without the old course. The good news is there's a kind of a mini movement in architecture now, led by David Kidd and a couple of others, notably Tiger at Blue Jack National, toward more welcoming courses.
Right.
Easier, wider, slightly easier walks as well. And I think that's a good thing, not only for us old guys, but as I say, for inveigling new converts into the game. So let's hope that down the road we'll see more courses to start young on and grow old on.
And absolutely, and I think that brings in pace of play and stuff too. Because
sure.
I mean, it's if you're taking a couple minutes to walk from one green to the next tee, then it's just going to make the round, over 18 times doing that. It's going to make it exponentially longer.
Or worse, you're looking for a bunch of balls throughout the round because it's so tight and so tough. And
exactly.
It's interesting with both of those examples, David Kidd and Tiger Woods. Both of those guys have kind of come around to this easier way of golf almost by starting in the harder designs. I mean, Tiger, right, through experiencing the harder designs by playing them. But you look at David Kidd's earlier designs, he started with Bandon, let's say.
He started easy and then lost the three.
He lost his way, kind of, and then realized through that process, hold on, golf is enjoyable not because it's, a thrashing over 18 holes. It's enjoyable because it's a walk in the park, a place where young people and older players can both enjoy a round. But it's very interesting thinking about the paths those two in particular have taken to get to where they
are.
Well,
Kidd, he actually asked himself, what did I do right in my 20s that I didn't do in my 30s that I can do again in my 40s?
How many people look back to their 20s mm-hmm. and their 40s?
Like, how can I go back to
how
that?
How can I replicate what I was doing?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, good
and both of us being in our 20s, it'll be interesting to look back in a few years. But and then the best example of that now is Mammoth Dunes, his new.
Right.
The widest fairways that I've seen pictures, I haven't been, but the widest fairways I've ever seen almost. And people that I've talked to that have played it have said, that's you're not going to lose a ball, but it's interesting. And I think that's kind of where these courses on this part of the list kind of file into.
Yeah, that and Gamble Sands is his other one.
Right,
like
correct.
Yeah.
Exactly. Correct. So the next category is worth the trip. And these are just, places that are kind of far off. You got Japan, New Zealand, all that sort of stuff. So they're kind of all over the world, but worth making the trip to if you have the means and the access.
Yeah, in a sense, this was George bragging about the great places he's been. So,
fair enough. Don't blame me.
But I have to say, looking at this list, each of them brings back an interesting memory. Like Hirono has this terrific museum with Eisenhower's golf clubs in it. It's like the Augusta National of Japan.
Right.
Barnbougle Dunes, I played in the company of kangaroos. It was just amazing. I mean, wallabies walking right up next to you, down the fairway like spectators. Durban may be the toughest start I've ever had. It's just a narrow gauntlet of holes to begin with. Kapalua in Hawaii. I mean, my view, the best mountain golf course in the world. And talk about big, wide fairways and fun to play. Kingston Heath, I know everybody loves Royal Melbourne. I think Kingston Heath is better and may have the best set of greens I've ever played in my life.
We were out, Grayland and I were out playing earlier this week, and we were talking about Australia, and I asked him because he took a trip there, taking a trip there 2 years ago. And I asked him what was, if you had to play one course in Australia over again, his answer was the same for the same reason. I said, really, over Royal Melbourne? And he said, yep, Kingston Heath just does it for me.
Yeah.
And I think the same.
I don't know if I would necessarily try and argue that Kingston Heath is a better course than Royal Melbourne or, just on a true architectural basis, but Kingston Heath just clicked with me. I mean, when you take in that walk in the park factor, that enjoyable walk factor, Kingston Heath checked all the boxes.
Yeah.
And everyone in Australia was friendly, but everyone at Kingston Heath was particularly nice, and it just added up to a special day.
Yeah, they were. It's a real welcoming club. It's not stuffy, but the greens are what I remember. Mm-hmm. I've never three-putted as happily as I did at Kingston. To go through the rest of it, Nine Bridges may be the best course money can buy. It's just spectacular mountain setting.
Right.
Rich Korean guy just put everything into it. And then you've got this course called Nordvik in the Netherlands. People like the neighboring Kennemer and Hague courses better. I like Noordwijk. It has this sort of fairy tale forest in the middle of the links. And you walk, suddenly, you know, you're in this barren windblown links, and suddenly you're walking with deer in the forest. And then you come out of it, and you're back in the barren. It's just a cool course. And
wow. Yeah.
Royal Calcutta, I played in 1978. It's the second oldest golf country in the world. That was the 150th anniversary of golf in India.
Wow.
When I played it in 1978. And you play there, the caddies, they have caddies and four caddies. And the four caddies put a little red cloth over every golf ball after it comes to rest to keep the crows. They have really dumb crows.
Oh, wow.
They come in and take the balls and run away with it. So that's, and then Southern Downs on there, it's just this amazing limestone-based cliff that you play in the company of sheep. Beautiful. And in Spring City, in China, it's called Spring City because it's spring-like conditions all year round. And just you play on a mountain next to a lake. And the last one is Titirangi in New Zealand, where I had the pleasure of playing the Shell New Zealand Open. This had to be 40 years ago. And my partner was Peter Thompson. So
wow.
I can still remember watching him hit a two-iron and just the sound. And there's nothing like it.
That's an old McKenzie course.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yep.
So good memories.
Nice. Oh, yeah.
George, hearing about all these places you've been, and I ask this question kind of knowing some of your stories, tell us about your best golf day in terms of playing multiple courses in a day or spanning large distances in a day.
Well, there was one crazy day back in, I believe it was either 1982 or 83, where with Bobby Clampett and Hughes Norton, who was his agent, and Brian Morgan, the golf photographer.
Mm-hmm.
I played St. Andrews, Pebble Beach, and Wingfoot in the same day. Not in that order. We played St. Andrews first. We teed off at St. Andrews at 4:09 in the morning, and I think we have the record for the earliest finish by a four ball. It was something like 6:25. And we hopped in a cab, went to the Lucre's Airport, got a puddle jumper, and met the Concorde, which was in Birmingham, the Open Championship at Birkdale, having completed the night before. And there they all are on the plane, Palmer, Nicklaus, Trevino, Floyd, Miller, waiting for us four clowns to climb. And we climbed on with our golf bags, laid them out in the aisle, and it took off. And 2.5 hours later, we landed in JFK, took a helicopter to Wingfoot, played that in 2.5 hours, helicoptered back to JFK, and got a private plane to, we thought it was going to go to California. It didn't. In fact, I'm sitting on the Concorde, and Ray Floyd is across the aisle. He says, "How are you getting to California?" I said, actually, Palmer said, "How are you getting to California?" I said, "Well, we got a Falcon jet." He said, "No, you're not." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, and then he says to Floyd, "Ray, tell him about a Falcon jet." And Floyd, with those big eyes, he looks at me, "They're fast, but they don't last." And sure enough, it made it to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and we had to stop and refuel. And then we went to Monterey, and we had plenty of time there. We had like three hours and 20 minutes to do it in 24 hours. And we made it. So,
oh my gosh,
crazy day.
That is amazing.
And then, so I'm sure that there was a celebration afterwards, but it didn't last very long. And I'm sure you went straight to sleep.
It's the funniest thing. We were so pumped up.
Yeah.
We never slept on any of the plane flights.
Right.
Clampett went out and got us shooting baskets. I don't know. There must have been a basketball hoop near the 18th at Pebble for summer. I remember shooting baskets, but yeah, eventually we got plenty of sleep.
Oh my gosh. I think that you four hold that distinction of being the only people to do that or will ever do that.
We'll ever do that because of the Concorde.
Right.
And I did do another one with Ben Crenshaw where we played 18 holes on 18 different courses in the New York metropolitan area in one day. We started at Shinnecock, finished at Baltusrol, and went through Long Island, Westchester, Connecticut, and New Jersey in between.
So you picked kind of the best holes from
the best hole at each of 18 prominent courses in the Met area.
So which ones? I mean, the Met area is just so rich.
We started at the 14th at Shinnecock,
right?
And then we played through Maidstone. No, we didn't play Maidstone. We played National, Garden City, Wingfoot, Quaker Ridge. couple of others up there. I think we played one at Stanwich, and then we played a bunch of them in New Jersey. All I can remember is that Crenshaw one putted seven greens in a row on seven different golf courses in three different states.
That's amazing.
Oh my gosh.
He shot 76. I think I had 92, but yeah. I was quite pleased with that.
Oh yeah.
That's
yeah.
incredible.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing. So kind of the last little part of your column is kind of places that you would like to go, but have not been yet. And you mentioned that it's gonna be a lot of fun, you know, trying, but you have no ambition to maybe make all of them, but just will have a good time just if you get even a few of them. So which courses were those, and which kind of stick out in your mind?
Yeah, as I said, I'm never going to make 1,000, but I'd like to knock a few more off. And I keep a running bucket list of 10 internationals and 10 American courses. The American ones are sort of split between courses designed rather recently, and then there are five of them I just never gotten to. Like,
right.
They're off my beaten path, if not off the beaten path, like
right.
Crystal Downs and Camargo in the Midwest, and Deepdale, for some reason, in New York, is just a very exclusive club that I've never been to. Mountain Lake in Florida. I've lived within an hour and a half there, and dozens of people have told me, because I love Seth Rayner courses, and it's a Seth Rayner that I'd love it, and I'm sure I'll get to it at some point.
Right.
But in a way, I don't want to go to these courses, because it's been so long and they've been touted by so many people. I almost feel like the last guy to go to the movie, you're not going to be sucked in. It's a little bit the way you felt, Graylin, with going to Pebble Beach.
Yeah.
You know, you're determined not to be, but I'll get to a bunch of them, I'm sure. Yeah,
that's and there are some great courses on that list, but I see where you're coming from with the whole, they've been trumpeted for so long, and they, you know, probably are great courses, but because you've heard about them for years and years and years,
yeah,
from so many people, that they might not, you know, necessarily live up to, although they might be great courses, but yeah. And so what's the one that, if you could choose out of that 20?
You know, it's a strange one. Lofoten Links in Norway.
Yeah.
It's the northernmost links course in the world, and I have never seen photographs that are more compelling than the ones of this golf course. It looks like it was designed on the moon. And it's been there for a long time, but it's recently had a renovation and a rebirth, really.
Right.
And you can play it in the summer at literally any hour of the day, because the sunlight's there, you know, all day long in the summer. And if you catch it at the right time of the year, you can experience the northern lights as well.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah. And happily, it's like a 1 or 2 hour plane ride from St. Andrews. So I hope at some future visit to make a quick trip up there.
No, absolutely.
That. We'll record a podcast with you.
No, because I want to hear all about it. I've seen pictures and I know exactly what you're referring to, but it looks just stunning. Yeah. Absolutely stunning. Yeah. But yeah, so it's 750 courses and 50 favorites. And I think, very, very good. So what would be, we talked about your bucket list. Graylin, what would be on yours? I'll speak to mine. I have a lot of them, but.
Instead of doing 10 international and 10 U.S., I'll do one international and one U.S. I've never played Royal County Down, and that has been on the top of my bucket list, including the 4 years that I was in Scotland and could have easily gotten there. It just never happened. I went over there once and the course was closed for an event. And
did you play Portrush?
I did, yeah.
I'll be interesting to see whether you like it better than Portrush. The world divides between those two.
You can read someone based on what they say. Well, so that would be my international. And then here in the U.S., really Chicago Golf Club has always been a big one for me, particularly after watching... Was it the U.S. Women's Amateur? U.S. Women's Senior Open on the course recently. It's an exciting place. And like George, I share a love for Rayner and McDonald courses. And I think it from what I've read and seen, it would embody a lot of what I like about all of those Rainer and McDonald courses that, I've played.
Absolutely.
So, Ian, what about you?
Well, all right. So I'll do one or two. I haven't played. I'll make the caveat here. I have not played any golf overseas. So I have a lot of exploring to do in Scotland, Ireland, over in Europe and stuff like that. So I'll do two in Scotland that stick out to me. One being the Old Course, just, you know, multiple times, because the first time it won't, I'm sure, as people say, it won't reveal itself fully to you. The other being North Berwick is my other one that sticks out in Scotland to me. And then here in the U.S., my number one on my bucket list would probably be National Golf Links.
Good choice.
It's I've read Scotland's Gift a few times now, and just the history and the C.B. McDonald course and his place in American golf. I think that's just the birthplace for everything that we have, you know, to thank our lives in golf here. So I think that'd be a really cool experience. But and then obviously St. Andrews and North Berwick would be really, really cool. So well, I have a lot of time, hopefully, to knock those out and quite a few more. But we'll see.
Well, this has been a blast to speak with you, George. Fittingly, we actually have to wrap this one up because all three of us have a tea time. So we actually need to get out to the golf course.
751 for me. Number 751.
It actually is, isn't it?
It is. It's a new course.
Well, perfect. We've enjoyed speaking today, and I hope everyone, if they haven't already read your column in our fall 2018 issue, run out, grab a copy, or check us out on linksmagazine.com. But as always, engage with our content wherever we put it up. We have Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram that Ian runs and does a great job. Ask us questions, send us topics you'd like us to discuss on upcoming podcasts, or just reach out and say, hey guys, you know, I'm trying to decide between this course and that course, or this destination or that destination.
Port Rush or County Down.
Yeah, exactly. We will always speak to you and let you know what we think. Subscribe to Links Magazine at the top right-hand corner of linksmagazine.com, and subscribe to Links Digital. That's for free. You can subscribe in the same place, top right-hand corner of linksmagazine.com. If you have any questions or want to suggest future topics, you can email us at letters@linksmagazine.com. But until next time, Ian, thanks. It's been a blast.
George, thank you so much again for taking the time to speak with us. And it was a blast. So looking forward to playing some golf later on today.
Thanks, guys. It was fun.